fallen over the years and the people who are victims of terror in Eretz Yisrael, the mood shifts to a mood of joy, to a mood of simcha, with the arrival of Yom HaAtzmaut, which this year actually falls and is observed all over on the 5th of Iyar. And I would just like for a few moments, and I thank my son, Rav Yaakov, for inviting me, to try and explore with you a little bit what the significance of the establishment of a Jewish state in Eretz Yisrael is from a halachic and a religious point of view. Obviously, I don't know everybody who is here, and even just looking at some of the pictures, you know, I can't really tell everybody's age, but I think it is safe to say that the overwhelming majority of people here have no recollection of a world where there was not a Jewish state in the land of Israel. And those here who might be listening who do have that recollection probably don't recollect it for too much more than, you know, when they were young children. It's 72 years old now, the state of Israel. And as such, it's something which was so beyond belief that nobody, even a few years before the establishment of the state in 1948, could ever possibly imagined that would it even happen. It was, you know, if you would have told somebody a few years before, and I don't mean only a few years before because of the events of the Holocaust, of course, which we commemorated last week, but even after the Holocaust, the idea that there would be a Jewish state in the land of Israel, even though people have been working on it, you know, in the terms of the Zionist Congress and Herzl for some 50 years, it was still something that for most people was absolutely unimaginable. There are two times during the course of the year where we have as part of our liturgy the statement Lashon HaBo B'Yerushalayim. And that is at the conclusion of the Seder on Pesach night and at the conclusion of Ne'ilah and Yom Kippur. And for the overwhelming majority of the last 2,000 years, this was something that was a dream. You know, it was Lashon HaBo B'Yerushalayim, we're going to go to Yerushalayim. There were always a handful of Jews who lived in Yerushalayim, and there were always certain people who traveled basically to die and be buried in Yerushalayim. But the idea that the city of Yerushalayim would exist as we know it today, a thriving city in a thriving country, was something that was unimaginable, to even the most optimistic, I think, of people. And yet, that's exactly what took place. And that's exactly what we mark on the 72nd anniversary of the creation of the state here today on the 5th of Iyar, Tavshin Pei. What's so important about it? I'm not going to focus in the few moments that I have this evening on politics. We can like the government or not like the government. In Israel, they're split still about whether they like the government or not. And we can discuss halachic issues in terms of the establishment of a state based on Gemaras and so on. And it was the right thing to do. It wasn't the right thing to do. We're happy. We're not. One thing for sure that we have to celebrate as observant Jews, and that is Jewish sovereignty over Eretz Yisrael. Whether we're pleased with the government or we're not pleased with the government, whether it should have come about this way or it should have come about a different way. So that's something we can debate and people can argue about it, and people have argued about it, people more knowledgeable and greater than I. But one thing for sure, Jewish sovereignty over the land of Eretz Yisrael, something unheard of for 2,000 years, since before the Churban Bayis Sheni. The Bayis Sheni was destroyed around the year 70 of the Common Era, okay, close to 2,000 years ago. And it was already before that that the Jews really did not have political control. They were under the thumb of the Romans and so on. And the idea of a Jew and a Jewish government being established, whether it's a religious government, not religious enough, too religious, again, that's not the issue. It is a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. And that is something which is truly remarkable. And you're going to tell me, or some will argue, yeah, but they're not all Shomer Shabbos, not all Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. Well, I have news for you. During the time of the Tanakh, there were kings in Eretz Yisrael who also are not the greatest role models that we've ever had. And yet it was still a Jewish government. It was still, this is not my argument, by the way. I recommend for your reading, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik Zatzal wrote a beautiful article about Yom HaAtzmaut in Halacha and Hashkofa, and it was printed in a book that collected some of his essays called, I think, The Warmth and the Light, and well worth reading. And the fact is that regardless of what we hold about the people in the government, Jews in control of Eretz Yisrael, it's unbelievable. And I think that that has halachic import. And I'll give you a very simple proof for that. There is a din, there is a halacha, that when somebody goes brought in the Gemara, and it's brought in the Rambam, and it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch, And in all these places, it says, and we tend to study this around Tisha B'Av time because it relates to Tisha B'Av. In fact, in the Shulchan Aruch, it appears at the end of Hilchos Tisha B'Av, that when one goes and sees certain areas in Eretz Yisrael, b'churbanan, in a state of destruction, one is required to tear kriya. One is required to rip one's shirt, just as Rachmana Litzlan, one has to do that upon, God forbid, the death of a relative. You tear kriya. And the Gemara mentions, and again, it's in the Shulchan Aruch, it's in the Rambam, it's in the Shulchan Aruch, you have to tear kriya when you see Are Yehuda b'churbanam, the cities of the area of Yehuda around Yerushalayim. You have to tear kriya. And there's a certain pasuk and a certain statement you make. And again, this all appears in the Shulchan Aruch. You can look it up, the last siman in Hilchos Tisha B'Av. And then it says, when you see Yerushalayim, when you come, you travel further, you're coming into Eretz Yisrael, you see the Ari Yehuda, when you come to the Ari Yehuda, but now you come to Yerushalayim, and you see Yerushalayim, b'churbana. So once again, you have to tear kriya, tear further. And then when you see the Harabayis, the Mokom HaMikdash, you see the Beis HaMikdash in a state of desolation, you have to tear kriya again, all three times. And this is a din, as I said, that appears, and for all intents and purposes, is certainly relevant today. No reason that shouldn't be relevant today. Now, working backwards, when we do see the Harabayis, so according to many poskim today, we see the mosque, even if you don't see the actual ground floor where the Beis HaMikdash stood and where the mosque now stands, but you see, as you walk down, many of us have been to Eretz Yisrael, you walk down those steps in the old city through the Jewish quarter, and so if you come from that direction, you won't really see the ground of where the mosque stands, where the Beis HaMikdash stood. If you're on the other side, let's say by the Hebrew University on Mount Scopus campus or on Har HaZeisim, you'll talk to see the ground. But many people, I would venture to say most people who travel today to Yerushalayim come through the old city, walk through the Jewish quarter, and come down those steps. I think they're working on building an elevator there now. I think they've been working on it for some time. But there is supposed to be some sort of elevator, not to have to walk up all those steps. When you come down at a certain point, you see the golden dome of the mosque. And halacha is, you're supposed to tear kriya. This has nothing to do, by the way, with whether you endorse the state of Israel or don't. That's a din. You tear kriya because sof kol sof, the Beis HaMikdash is not there. So with everything that we have, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and therefore we tear kriya. What about Yerushalayim? What about tearing Yerushalayim? So here we find an interesting machlokas, a machlokas haposkim, contemporary poskim. Moshe Feinstein held one way, Zalman Arbach held the other way. The question is, why do we tear kriya for Yerushalayim? So there are really two different approaches. We're not going into all the details now because time doesn't permit. But we tear kriya, according to some, we tear kriya for Yerushalayim because Yerushalayim is, as it were, a spillover of the Beis HaMikdash. We know that, for example, in dealing with certain karbanos, when you brought certain sacrifices, you brought certain karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, you could eat the meat from the karbanos within the walls of Yerushalayim, whatever the parameters exactly are. And so the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is a spillover of the Kedusha of the Mikdash. If that's the case, it would make sense to say that we should still tear Kriya in Yerushalayim today, upon coming to Yerushalayim today, because that aspect of Yerushalayim, that we can eat Kodshim Kalim there, and Ma'aseh Sheni and other things, that no longer applies, perhaps. So therefore, we should continue to tear Kriya today. That's how some poskim hold. On the other hand, there are other poskim who are of the opinion that the reason we tear kriya in Yerushalayim is because Yerushalayim, in addition to its kedusha in connection with the Beis HaMikdash, has its kedusha as the capital of Eretz Yisrael, the capital of Halacha of Eretz Yisrael. It's the seat of Malchus. Okay, it's the seat of the of Jewish sovereignty, and therefore the seat of Jewish sovereignty. When there's the Malchus Yisrael, and Malchus Yisrael doesn't have to mean only the kings and the Malachim. We have rayas from that from elsewhere, from Rabban and others, that Jewish sovereignty in a certain sense can count as Malchus. So therefore, the fact is, well, today we do have Jewish sovereignty in Yerushalayim. Okay, and therefore we perhaps shouldn't tear kriya. So that's a dispute. And the general practice is we do not tear kriya upon coming to Yerushalayim because the suffolk. And you're not supposed to just tear garments out as a din of bal tashkis. You're not supposed to ruin things, you know, if it's not necessary. You're not supposed to just wantonly destroy property, etc. So therefore, based on the concern of bal tashkis on one side, since it's not really clear whether there's an obligation, the mitzvah is enforced, and therefore we don't tear in Yerushalayim. What about the Ari Yehuda? So there, everybody agrees we don't tear. Morgan Avram already writes. Morgan Avram already writes. Okay, that. The reason we generally do tear for Ari Yehuda is because they're b'churbana. Now, what does b'churbana mean? In a state of churban, a state of destruction. What if the cities are built up? Do you still tear? So Magen Avraham already writes, well, we still tear Kriya because he defines b'chorbanam as meaning under non-Jewish control. It doesn't matter what a place looks like, whether it's built up, whether it's nice, it's all buildings and cities and whatever else, malls, whatever else we have in a town, it can be built up. But so long as there is no Jewish control over these areas, it's not under Jewish sovereignty. That, says the Magen Avraham, is defined halachically as b'chorbanam. Therefore, modern poskim posited, Rav Zevin writes this in one of his essays in the Sefer Lo'or HaHalacha, and others say it as well, that since today the Ari Yehuda are under Jewish sovereignty, then that's not considered to be b'chorbanam. Okay, they're not in this state of destruction anymore. And that is indeed the practice. We don't tear. Now, it's an interesting question. What about areas that they gave over to the Palestinian Authority, areas of the Beit Lechem and other places around there? That's an interesting question. The fact that many assume that since the Israeli army still has some sort of shlita over that area, so that the din wouldn't apply. Okay, I'm not interested so much in the din right now, rather in that concept presented by the Magen Avraham. And that is, what do you mean, b'chorbanon? B'chorbanon, the definition of chorban is a lack of Jewish sovereignty. If that's the case, then the establishment of Jewish sovereignty is the reversal of chorban, is the beginning of geula. It's just a logical point. If the Magen Avraham says that chorban means lack of Jewish control over the area, then the establishment of Jewish control of the area is a reversal of chorban. It's a step towards geula. Is it the final geula? Certainly not. We don't have the Beis HaMikdash. But it's a step towards geula, halachically. And that has halachic ramifications. And therefore, it seems to me that from a halachic point of view, the establishment of Jewish sovereignty over Eretz Yisrael 72 years ago, today, the 5th of Iyar, or tonight, the 5th of Iyar, is the beginning of the process of the reversal of a churban and the beginning of geula. Yes, that's why people refer to it as Aschalta de Geula. Aschalta de Geula. It's not a term that the Zionists made up. I'm not sure it's in the Gemara. I think it's in the Zohar and other places. But it's the concept of Geula, maybe the phrase Aschalta de Geula, I don't think it's in the Gemara, but it's in the Zohar. But the concept of Geula, and Geula meaning a restoration of Jewish sovereignty, that I believe is clear from the poskim. And therefore, we mark on Yom HaAtzma'ut, forgetting about all the politics and everything else, is that we have been zochet to see the beginning of the process of the reversal of Chorban, as I said, from a halachic point of view. How long will that beginning last? I don't know. That beginning may last, well, so far it's lasted 72 years. We hope, the next part of the Geula happened right away. That I can't tell you. But at least it's a beginning. It's at least the first step. And it's very, very interesting. We have a tradition, the Ramban and Chumash, that there are only going to be two Chorbanos. There won't be a third Chorban. We have the Bayis Rishon was destroyed, the Bayis Sheni was destroyed. We have a tradition that there will not be a third Chorban, a third destruction. Ramban brings us, and we're talking about the wells that were dug by Yitzhak Avinu and other places, so there won't be a third Chorban, which means, if you understand correctly, that this step is a step towards the final building of the Beis HaMikdash. I don't know how long it's going to take. That could take one day, could take 1 week, could take a year, could take 10 years, take 100 years. I don't know how long it's going to take. We hope it'll happen quickly. But it's a step in that direction, and that we have to acknowledge. And it's an irreversible step. And the fact that we have Jewish sovereignty over Eretz Yisrael is a step towards Geula. It's interesting that when the discussion is recorded in Maseches Megillah about the establishment of the holiday of Purim was being bandied about among the Chacham of that time. So Esther and Mordechai wanted to establish a holiday and so on. And it's not so simple. You can't just establish a holiday. There's a din of Baal Tosef. You're not allowed to just add on to what it says in the Torah. So a whole discussion, those who are familiar with Maseches Megillah may remember that the Gemara debated whether it was okay or not okay. And the Gemara concluded that it is okay. But what's interesting is that it seems from the Psukim that originally they wanted to establish it as a Yom Tov. As a Yom Tov. I mean, Yom Tov, that's what the Gemara says, a Yom Tov with Isra Malacha. Someone prohibited work and so on. Mamish like Yom Tov, like Sukkot, like Pesach, like Shavuos. Because the Pasuk in Megillas Esther says Yom Tov initially. That was not accepted. It did not become a Yom Tov. It just came a day of Mishloach Manos, Matanos of Yonim, and Simcha, Mishta, and so on. But it was not established as a Yom Tov. What gives us the right even to have a meaning to establish it as a Yom Tov? So the Nesivos HaMishpat, the Nesivos is famous for his commentary, the Nesivos on Chosha Mishpat, wrote many, many other Sarim. He also wrote a commentary on the Megillas and one on Megillas Esther as well. And the one on Megillas Esther is printed in the regular Mikros Gedolos Chumashim, Megillas Esther. It's called Megillas Starim. Samach Tov Sisarim, right? The secret Megillas Starim. So he says, he has an idea that anything, based on Gemaras, that anything which is done that will repair or lead to improvement of the Beis HaMikdash, of Yerushalayim and so on, and service HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Mikdash, that is an event that should be marked and can even be commemorated yearly. And the raya is from something called Megillas Tainis, which is an ancient scroll that there's many suggest that is the first piece of Torah Shema ever written down. That in the time of the Bayis Sheni, they actually had certain days that they observed as mini Yomim Tovim. What were these days? There's a whole list of each month. It was this day, that day. What did they do? Not that much. It was a mini Yom Tov. Today, the parallel would be, we don't say Tachanan. That's how we do. Mini, it's not exactly, you know, like Lag Bomer, something like Moses. It's a mini Yom Tov. Establishes a mini Yom Tov. Now, what were all these days? So you look, the Gemara discusses them, and you can read Megillas Tainis. These are all days. Megillas Tainis is available in print. Okay, now there are critical editions and scholarly editions and with commentaries. Masifta put out an edition of Megillas Tainis. I have several copies here in my own house of Megillas Tainis. So the Megillas Tainis, these were things they repaired the Mizbeach. They fixed this. They fixed other things and so on. The Gemara concludes in talking about Megillas Tainis at Botla Megillas Tainis. In fact, the only 2 days of Megillas Tainis that remain, that's Chanukah and Purim. Chanukah and Purim are both listed in Megillas Tainis. In fact, those who are familiar with the Gemara in Shabbos, where the Gemara says that, you know, my Chanukah, the Tanur Rabbanan, etc., where's that Tanur Rabbanan? That Tanur Rabbanan is in Megillas Tainis. The Gemara is quoting from Megillas Tainis, tells the whole story of Chanukah. The Gemara in Shabbos on Chaf Aleph Mabez. So Chanukah survived and Purim survived. The rest of them don't survive, and we can discuss Chanukah and Purim. Bezer Hashem, we'll talk about it another time, maybe even in person, hopefully. But the other days, it's what are you going to observe a day honoring the fact that they fixed the mizbeach, or they fixed the floor in the Beis Hamikdash? You put 2,000 what Beis Hamikdash? What floor? What mizbeach? Once the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, it's a bottle of Megillas Tainis, except for Chanukah and Purim for certain reasons. But the idea that the Nesiva says is that when you have something which is clearly going to lead to the Binyan Beis Hamikdash eventually, it's an irreversible step, so to speak. So then there's reason, there's a source for celebrating this day, even on a year-to-year basis on the anniversary. If that's the case, you take that what the Nesiva says over there, we can apply it to our current situation. If indeed we believe that 72 years ago, on the 5th of Iyar, on this day, 72 years ago, a tremendous, momentous event happened. Jewish sovereignty was restored to land of Eretz Yisrael. And we believe, as the Magen Avraham implies, that since Churban is defined as a lack of Jewish sovereignty, then the logical step, the logical extension of that Magen Avraham is that the undoing of Churban is defined by the establishment of Jewish sovereignty. And that's a step towards, eventually, the building of Beis HaMikdash. So then this is a day that we have to celebrate. How we celebrate it's the discussions, Hallel, with a bracha, not with a bracha, Hallel at night. You know, now everybody's communicating by email and by, you know, WhatsApp and everything. So all rabbinic discussion. Okay, so you'll follow your Rav, okay? I don't know where he gets his ideas from, but you'll follow him. And you'll follow what your community's minhag is. Other people have a minhagim. We can respect different minhagim. That's fine. Okay? But at the end of the day, to give hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, some form of thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's got to be in place. You know, that even the newspaper Hamodia, right, which is in the Yeshivish world, the Haredish world, when Hamodia in 1948, when establishing the State of Israel, the headline was, Baruch Shechiyanu V'kimanu V'higanu L'zman Hazeh. Never mind politics, and never mind all the other stuff that sometimes occupies our attention. Kodesh Baruch Hu allowed us to restore Jewish sovereignty to Eretz Yisrael, something which a few years before it happened, as I said before, was unimaginable, and it happened. And you know, those who know the history a little bit, the United States and Russia, they got together, they both voted. I don't know how many times in history of the United Nations, the United States and the Soviet Union, at least when it was the Soviet Union, now it's different, you know, but when those remember, before the fall of the Soviet Union, you know, when the United States and Soviet Union were bitter enemies, I'm not sure statistically how many times they voted the same in the United Nations. Usually they voted the opposite, okay? Somehow, for this, the United States and Soviet Union came together in 1948. Okay, and there were people, you know, Truman, just at that moment, some say afterwards he wasn't sure he made the right decision, maybe regretted the decision, all kinds of literature about it. But at the end of the day, somehow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrated, we'll call in today's parlance, the perfect storm. And it came together, and Jewish sovereignty was restored to Eretz Yisrael. What does Geula mean? What does Geula mean? For those of us who are B'nai and B'nos Torah and committed, Geula is an opportunity to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where do I get that from? That's the Ramban. You know, the Chazal, and I'll finish with this. I know that I'm running out of time, right? So just a couple more minutes, if I may. The all of the books of the Chumash have nicknames. All five books of the Chumash have nicknames. You know, we call usually the books of the Chumash by one of the first words of the first parsha, and that's particular sefer. So Bereishis, Ve'ila Shmos, Vayikra, right? B'midbar Sinai, El Advarim, right? We have the nicknames based on the words, one of the opening words of the, like we do with the parshas, one of the opening words of the sefer. The English translations, the popular English names, if you'll notice, other than Bereishis, which is Genesis, don't have anything to do with the Hebrew names. So the word Shmos does not mean Exodus. Okay, and the word Vayikra does not mean Leviticus, and the word Bamidbar does not mean Numbers, and the word Dvarim doesn't mean Deuteronomy. So where do these quote-unquote English names from the Greek come from? They come from Chazal's nicknames. Chazal had different nicknames. Bereishis is Bereishis, but the book of Shmos is called by Chazal Sefer HaGeula. Sefer HaGeula. You know what that means? Exodus. Okay? And, you know, Sefer Dvarim is called by Chazal Mishneh Torah, the second Torah, Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy from the second, Deuteronomy, etc. So Ramban, his introduction to his commentary on Sefer Shmos, wonders, why is the book of Shmos called Sefer HaGeula? Well, Tom, what do you mean? You know, Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yeah, that's a nice nickname for the first few parshas. But once you come to Parshas Yisro, right, after B'Shalach, you had the Kriyas Yamsuf, so after that Yisro, Amishpatim and Chumat, Tetzavik, Kisisa, Vayakal, put a whole second half, certainly and more, of the parsha doesn't really seem to have that much to do with Geula. It's not an appropriate nickname for the whole Sefer. So the Ramban suggests, one second. The truth is, we can say without the Ramban, Kabbalah HaTorah, that is part of Yetzias Mitzrayim, because the whole purpose of coming out of Mitzrayim was to get the Torah. We're now in the Sefer between Pesach and Shavuos. The whole Pesach was to get to Shavuos. So that's part of Sefer Geula. Fine. Mishpatim is an extension of Yisro, more dinim. Okay. But Truma, Tetzaveh, Kisis, V'Hakam, Pekudah, at the building of the Mishkan, that too is Geula. Because the Ramban explains that Geula means having a place or a meeting place, so to speak, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what Geula really is all about. So the establishment of the Mishkan described in the second half of the book of Shmos, and I'm oversimplifying because the hour is late, but that's what the Ramban says is the book of Geula. So Geula really means establishing a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave, in the last 72 years, this incredible, you know, gift of Jewish sovereignty of Eretz Yisrael, so we can all go there whenever we want. Right now, we have technical difficulties getting there. But basically, we can go to Eretz Yisrael. Who does not feel, when you come to Eretz Yisrael, moved a little bit religiously when you come to the Mekomos HaKadoshim and certainly to the Kosel HaMaravi? Who doesn't sense the closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you can sense in Eretz Yisrael? The Ramban, based on a Medrash in Parshas Ekev, suggests that the whole reason we observe mitzvahs and chutzlarts is only because it's a warm-up. It's like spring training. You know, it's like the preseason. You know, we do the mitzvahs here in chutzlarts, so we'll be able to do them more properly in Eretz Yisrael. That's the ultimate goal. That's the geula. So we've been given that opportunity by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Jewish sovereignty over Eretz Yisrael, which has enabled us to build Eretz Yisrael in a way, again, that I'm not even sure the original Zionists and certainly people who established a state even envisioned. That the Mount of Torah, the Imam, you know, the Ramban writes, the Ramban came to Eretz Yisrael in the 1200s. Ramban writes, yeah, we have records of his trip. He couldn't get a minyan in Yerushalayim. That's how desolate and destroyed the place was. And Mark Twain, the American author in the 1880s, also took a trip to the Holy Land. And he writes about his trip. He went all around the world, and he wrote some of his you know, his experiences and sent them into, the Saturday Evening Post or whatever it was here in the night, or one of the magazines, Harper's, maybe I forgot, Mark Twain sent in. And he writes, when he came to the so-called Holy Land, he said, there was no place more desolate, no place more ruined, more empty. It was in the 1880s, okay, less than 150 years ago. And now, a minyan in Yerushalayim, there's a minyan in every building in Yerushalayim. Right, the minyan every corner in Yerushalayim, more than 10 people. Minyan every sarm store, every fruit store, and every, it's unbelievable. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. We've been zochet to see, not in the lifetime, again, I don't know everybody who's tuned in now, but I guess in the lifetime, if not our own lifetime, the lifetime of our parents, our grandparents, we don't know anything else. But it's a remarkable occurrence that we have Jewish sovereignty over Eretz Yisrael. And our hope is that just as we've been zochet to see this beginning of the Geula, it's a first step, Aschalta the Geula. Okay, it's some form of Aschalta the Geula. By the way, I'll add one thing. The Gemara says, you want to know what the sign of Geula? You want to know what the sign of Geula? When the land begins blossoming, it's a pasuk Yecheskel. You want Sanhedrin? When the land of Israel begin to flower and produce will begin to grow, which didn't happen for centuries, as Mark Twain observed. The land is blossoming. The Gemara says that's a sign of Geula. It's not me. It's not a Zionist. It's a Gemara Sanhedrin. Based on a pasuk in Yecheskel. We've witnessed that. We see that daily, the blossoming of the land, the growth of Eretz Yisrael, not just as a tech giant, but also the land itself, flowering and blossoming. We've seen all those things. We see it unfolding before our eyes. Don't we owe our Kadosh Baruch Hu at least a thank you, Yashar Koach? Okay, whether you want to say a hallel, you want to say with a bracha, not with a bracha, okay, we can discuss it. But to recognize that we've witnessed the reversal of Korban and a step towards Geula, a step towards getting close to our Kadosh Baruch Hu, that I think is something that makes this a Yom Hodah. It's a day on which we should thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu and acknowledge what he gave us, and at the same time daven that this first step will very quickly lead to the second step and the third step and ultimately to the final Geula with the Binyan Beis HaMikdash B'Mehera V'Yameinu. Amen. Thank you for listening, and I wish everyone a joyous Yom HaTzmaut.